Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable. Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's fact. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Episode 71 of In Studio Episodes. Do you think we're over 100, Mike, including the episodes we've done at events?
I think we're at 90.
Really?
I think so.
Oh, man. I thought we were over 100, including the ones we've done at events and the interviews we've done outside of the studio. But
nearly. Probably a month.
We're getting there. We're almost there. But once again, guys, thank you guys for joining us. I'm Danny Z with my partner right across from me, Michael, the Franchise Shepherd. Thanks again for listening to the Last Round Podcast this week, whether you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. I'm sure if you have a favorite podcasting platform, we're on there because we're on a lot that I don't even remember the name. Right, Mike?
What do they always say? We're on all good podcast apps.
I guess. But even if it's not up to our standards, we're on there anyways. But we got another guest this week. Last week we had Dougie Fisher. A lot of people like listening to Dougie Fisher. That episode's been doing good since it came out. He's been on a few times. We appreciate that. And we got another senior member of the media who's been around the sport very, very long time. His credentials are as long as I'm 6'7". They're probably longer than me. So he's from Yahoo Sports. And he was also at the Wilder Fury fight a couple weeks ago. I'm not sure if he was at the DAZN card in Dallas. I'm not sure. But he's always at the major fights. He's always writing about different things. He's seen it all and he's still continuing to cover the sport. Kevin Ioli of Yahoo Sports. Thank you for jumping on.
Hey, I appreciate having you guys.
Thank you. So, let's just jump right into it, Kevin. Mikey Garcia, Jesse Vargas. What'd you think of, Mikey's performance and what'd you think of Jesse's performance as well?
Well, you know, you have to be impressed with what Mikey did. I mean, Jesse is an elite fighter. You know, he's not that top guy at welterweight where you have some really good welterweights out there. Errol Spence and Porter and Terrence Crawford and Danny Garcia and guys like that. But he is that next cut down. And I thought Mikey looked really, really good. I mean, Mikey's one of those guys that uses time in the fight to kind of figure out what you're doing, kind of get a feel for what you like to do, what you have, and then he goes. You know, so he's a slow starter sometimes. And I think you saw that a little bit on Saturday night when he started the way he did. Jesse was, you know, winning those early rounds. And I think it got people a little bit excited, like, hey, might we see an upset? I never was really that concerned, even though I wasn't that concerned from from Mikey's standpoint, even though, you know, I had Jesse winning those early runs, because I kind of know the way I've covered him since he turned pro and the way he fights. And I knew he was just kind of, you know, getting information, sort of putting everything in the memory banks and was figuring out what he wanted to do. And I think once he landed that 1-2, and I believe it was the fifth round, that totally changed the fight. And I didn't believe, even though Jesse, you know, who has a ton of heart, came back hard in the last round, I didn't feel like he was ever in the fight again after he got dropped.
Kevin, do you think going forward we'll see Mikey Garcia Pacquiao just to try and get those DAZN figures up?
Well, we'll see if Pacquiao's with DAZN. I mean, that's going to be a thing to watch. I mean, you know, Eddie Hearn is saying it, but because Eddie Hearn is saying it doesn't mean it's so. I think that's a fight that both guys want. I know Manny had been interested in that fight in the past. You know, there's been a lot of talk about it. So I think that there is some interest in that. The question is, you know, Manny has, you know, made some questionable choices over the years. You know, a great guy, and nobody ever wants to say a bad word about Manny Pacquiao. But if we think back to, you know, 2006, you know, he had signed a new contract with Top Rank, and then he flies from the Philippines to Los Angeles. Oscar De La Hoya meets him at the airport with $250,000 in cash and hands him that, and Manny signs a contract with Golden Boy. And that there's still a court order in effect over that particular case. So, you know, just because Eddie Hearn is saying that he's free doesn't necessarily mean it's free. I've talked to people who say on the on the PBC side that they still have paper on Manny, and then and even people that are close to Manny. So, you know, I don't know what's going on, but Michael, I would say to answer your question, I love the fight. I mean, I hope that that is the fight that no matter who promotes it and who puts it on, that that's the fight we get next, because I think it would be a heck of a fight.
I think it'd be an interesting matchup because obviously Mikey's not a natural welterweight, and obviously Manny Pacquiao is probably one of the smaller welterweights. So putting them together is kind of a good mix.
Yeah, I think so too. And I mean, you know, there's like a little bit of a contrast there. I mean, I think the size-wise, it's a good fight. You know, Manny, even at 41 years old, I think is still quicker and more athletic than Mikey is. But, you know, Mikey is a really smart fighter, as Manny is. And Mikey knows how to time, and he's accurate, and he knows how to pick his shots and how to place his shots. And I think, you know, you can make an argument at this stage for either guy winning that fight. I don't think it's a stretch at all to say, you know, Mikey Garcia could win. But would I be shocked if Manny Pacquiao, who just is coming off a win over Keith Thurman, would go out there and beat Mikey Garcia in his prime, Mikey Garcia? No, you know, we've seen too many times Manny Pacquiao, you know, we thought we counted him out and he comes back and does something like that. So I think whenever you can make that kind of argument and say, hey, on both sides of the story, you can make an argument for each guy, it's a good fight.
Kevin, and I just popped into my head, but when Mikey knocked down Vargas this past Saturday, I believe he was a straight right. I know Pacquiao had knocked down Vargas en route to his decision win as well when they fought in Vegas a couple of years back. Wasn't it a similar punch, or am I mistaken? Do you recall that?
I was at that fight, but I don't remember specifically what he hit him with, so I can't honestly answer that. I know that the punch that Mikey landed on Saturday to knock him down was something that he works on a lot. That's a combination that he throws a lot. You know, Manny being a southpaw, I'm not sure what the combination was that that was 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. I don't remember specifically that combination. So I'm not in a position to answer that, but I thought that was a combination we've seen from Mikey before.
Were you surprised that he was able to knock down Vargas? Cause I know a lot of people who I talked to after the fight subsequent to that day that were surprised that, because obviously Vargas is a naturally bigger guy, that he was able to hit the canvas at one point. Were you surprised seeing that?
I wasn't surprised he knocked him down. What I was surprised by is how badly he hurt him. You know, I thought, hey, you know, Mikey is an accurate puncher. He's one of those guys that, you know, places his shots well. So when you do that, you know, you can put somebody on the ground and get him down. But I thought it really changed the complexion of the fight. I mean, Jesse had a lot of hop and bounce in the step going into that round. And then when he got hit with that combination, you know, I mean, he recovered and toward maybe, 11 and 12, you know, he started to show a little bit of that life. But I thought that he was never the same after that. And that's what surprised me. Not so much the mere fact of putting him on the canvas, but, that he hurt him so bad and it took him so long to recover from it.
So you think Jesse moves up to 154 after this, or do you think he still tries to campaign at 147?
You know, Jesse's in a tough spot. I mean, because, you know, 154, I don't think he's big enough for 154. I mean, you think of some of the guys that are fighting at 154 now, and, you know, Charlo just pops into my mind, and he's huge compared to Jesse. You know, and so Jesse's kind of one of those tweeners, you know, and I think he's, you know, having some trouble making 147. It's a tough cut for him. I'm sure he thinks that he's probably, you know, losing a little bit strength wise, but I don't think he's big enough, nor do I think he has the pop to withstand those really elite 154. So he's kind of in a tough spot. I mean, if I were managing him and advising him, I think the thing I tell him to do is, you know, let's go fight by fight. Let's not campaign in any one division. Let's go out there and let's try to get good fights. You know, don't worry about chasing championships and don't worry about any of that stuff. Just go out there and find fights that make sense for you and take those fights and get in good fights. And I think if he does that, you know, he'll be okay. But I think when you look at him in that division, boy, I think that there's a lot of size and it would be difficult for him.
Kevin, you mentioned, you know, if you were managing and advising Jesse on some things in his career, obviously Jesse, at least the boxing fans know that, you know, he's worked under different trainers over the right course of his career. You know, if there was one trainer, at least from your experience in covering the sport, that you think Jesse could really possibly excel with, whether it's somebody who's not that known or somebody who is one of the senior members of boxing trainers. Who do you think he would fit best with?
Well, I mean, there's two guys come to mind, one of whom he's already worked with, Ismael Salas. I think Salas is a terrific trainer. And when you spend time, you know, Salas isn't a guy to hire for one fight and you get him for one fight and you go. I mean, he's a guy that's going to teach you and you're going to get a program. And I think Salas is a guy that, you know, you would use, you know, for a while. And I think, you know, if Jesse had it to do over again, and I haven't asked him this question, you know, I've talked to him many, many times about all his different trainers and, you know, he goes through them, you know, but I think if he were to be honest, I think he would say that, you know, if he stayed with Salas, that would be the guy. But the other person that I think, you know, that makes sense is Eddie Reynoso, a guy he hasn't worked with. I mean, I think Reynoso, just look at the you know, forget about Canelo. I mean, Reynoso did a tremendous job with Canelo, but look what he's done with Ryan Garcia. Like, I did not really think Ryan Garcia was that elite of a prospect. You know, Ryan was beating up on really low-level competition. And in 2017, when a lot of people were raving about him, I had a 6-0 fighter as my prospect of the year, and Teofimo Lopez. And then Teofimo Lopez came back and he repeated for me the next year. I didn't think Ryan was all that good, but I'll tell you what, he has made a tremendous improvement under Eddie Reynoso. And I think that the style that Jesse fights, Eddie Reynoso would be good for him. So those are two guys I would mention, one he's worked with and one he hasn't, but I would love to see what Reynoso could do with him.
So sidetracking just for a little bit, just to touch on that, since you did mention Ryan Garcia and since he is a hot topic in terms of boxing fans, especially lately. Yeah. You have seen improvement under Eddie Reynoso, but do you believe that he can sustain that improvement and actually become a world-class contender, even a world champion at that weight class, 135?
Well, you know, again, he's in a difficult weight class. I mean, you know, you look at some of those guys, you know, Lomachenko, Teofimo Lopez, Devin Haney. I mean, there are a lot, you know, Tank Davis. You know, I wonder what Tank's future is going to be with the law. And so that is a really good division. You could be a tremendous fighter. It's kind of like, it reminds me back in the 80s of welterweight when you had poor Wilfred Benitez there, who's a Hall of Famer, and people don't talk about him. They talk about Hearns, Leonard, and Duran as the great welterweights of that time.
Right.
And they forget about, you know, Pepino Cuevas was there too, but really Wilfred Benitez was the Hall of Famer and people don't talk about him. And I think Ryan Garcia could be in a spot like that. I'm not saying he's going to make the Hall of Fame, but I'm saying, you know, he could be a really, really good lightweight, and with that group of fighters that are out there, you know, not get a championship in that division. But, you know, he's with a connected promoter, and it is amazing how there are ways to find guys who are not necessarily A fighters that you can get championships, especially, you know, with the WPA giving belts out like they do. I know he's a WBC fighter. It's going to be tough for him, but I think he has made tremendous improvement in my mind working with Eddie.
Kevin, switching back to Mikey real quick. We went to his training camp and we were speaking to Robert and Peter, and we asked them, because obviously they made it well known that they didn't really want Mikey to fight at 147, but they said Mikey wanted to stay at that weight group to try and win a fifth world title at a fifth weight class. Do you think that's achievable for Mikey?
I would say difficult. You know, I think that's a difficult one for him, because who is he going to beat at that weight class? And so if you beat Manny Pacquiao, are you really the welterweight champion, right? I mean, Manny Pacquiao has a welterweight belt, but is he the welterweight champion? So I guess, you know, under the way we look at things now, you know, they would probably say, yeah, you know, he is, you know, he would have a title in a fifth weight class. And hey, you know, if he beats Manny Pacquiao, you know, God bless him. I mean, that is, an achievement in and of itself, whether there's a title or not. But I mean, you know, how many champions does the WBA have in that division? You know, we don't really know, you know, kind of what is going on there, but, you know, I look at it. Can he beat Crawford? I tend to doubt that. Crawford, I think, is just so elite. Can he beat Errol Spence? We saw him fight Errol Spence already. Man, you know, fight with Manny's a tough fight. You know, I mean, could he beat Virgil Ortiz? I mean, wow, that's a step up for Virgil. But, you know, so there's a lot of guys out there in that division that I think are going to be tough fights for Mikey, mainly because of size. You know, Keith Thurman's a tough fight for him. Danny Garcia's a tough fight for him. Keith Thurman told me one time that the hardest he ever was hit was by Danny Garcia. And people don't think of Danny Garcia as a super huge puncher. Mm-hmm. But he told me that, and it's always resonated with me. So if you look at it and you say, hey, you know, he's fighting Danny Garcia, who I think for some reason a lot of fans, you know, kind of sneer at and look down their nose at. Boy, I'll tell you what, I think that's he's a damn good fighter, and could, you know, is Mikey going to roll over him? I don't know. And he's not even a champion at this point.
I know Eddie Hearn's touched on if they do make the Manny and Mikey fight, it's probably going to be held in Saudi Arabia. What's your thoughts on obviously the fight's being held out in Saudi Arabia with all the stuff that goes on over there?
Well, obviously I wrote a column and I was opposed to it, you know, and I mean, here's the thing, like, and that was the same thing that happened when Mayweather fought McGregor, right? I was opposed to the fight just on principle. I don't want to see that. But I also don't want to say to a fighter, you know what? You can make, in that case, $100 million, and I'm going to tell you no because of some, you know, moral issue that I have, you know. So the fighters themselves, you know, that's they have to think in their own hearts what matters to them, what is their moral fiber, what does it mean? You know, in my own, you know, particular situation as I look at it, it would be difficult for me to say, hey, I want to fight there knowing, you know, the way that, you know, I mean, the human rights abuses, the terrible human rights abuses that they've had and the murder of Jamal Khashoggi and all that other stuff. But having said that, you know, I think, you know, fights in Saudi Arabia are here to stay, and you have to, you know, accept it or, you know, turn an eye to it. So, you know, I'm not going to condemn the fighters if they take it. You know, I would hope that somebody has, especially somebody like Manny Pacquiao, has a moral conscience and will be a leader. You know, he's a political leader, and I hope he would lead in that particular situation, but I wouldn't necessarily, you know, hold my breath waiting for him to do that.
Kevin, so, you know, kind of wrapping up the Mikey fight and, you know, his situation, just because we do know that this is one fight he's signed with DAZN, and then I believe reportedly that DAZN has an option to match his offer if he gets a larger offer from another promoter or something like that. Ideally, do you see Mikey fighting on DAZN in his next fight again, or maybe going with another promoter, maybe back to PBC?
I think Mikey has been a genius in what he's done since he left Top Rank. I mean, I wrote this a while ago, maybe before the Spence fight, you know, and I just talked about how impressed I was, and he gave himself the maximum flexibility. So, you know, he's going to go where the best offer is. Now, part of what's going to happen to Mikey, especially vis-a-vis Pacquiao, is going to play out, you know, out of his control over who actually controls Pacquiao. Now, I would think that the PBC, even if they have paper on him, they would like that fight too. Meaning if they have paper on Manny, they would like that fight too. So it might just be a matter of who puts the fight on. Is it put on by the PBC or is it put on by DAZN? But I think that's a fight that probably both promoters, both sides are going to like. But Mikey has really done a brilliant job. And I think a lot of fighters should look at what he's done and use the promoters to your advantage and don't be a part of their roster. So like somebody like Terrence Crawford. So, you know, basically the promoter can say, look at how many pound for pound people I have. You know what? Make sure you go to promoters that get you the right fights, that pay you the right money, that move you the right way. And not that Top Rank wouldn't move him the right way, but in Crawford's case, they don't have the bodies. They don't have the people in that weight class. So I think Mikey really played the landscape, look what was out there, and he gave himself flexibility. And because he did that, you know, he's going to benefit from it now. He has benefited in the past, and he will benefit in his next couple of fights.
Kevin, moving on to probably, you know, the fight of the weekend, the king, Roman Gonzalez, came back with a TKO 9 over Cal Yafai, winning the WBA super flyweight. Yafai was down in round 8 and round 9. Just break down that fight for us.
Boy, I'll tell you what, I love Chocolatito. I've loved him for a long time, been one of my favorite fighters to watch. You know, his fight with Estrada back in the day was just incredible. Always been a fan of his. I mean, such a good fighter, such a well-versed technical fighter, and he brings it, and a classy guy. I thought that Yafal fought fight. I don't know what he was thinking in that fight, but I think he decided, you know what, I'm going to beat him in his own game. And maybe he thought he was the bigger man, and, you know, but whatever it was, he fought the completely wrong fight, in my opinion. And he played right into Chocolatito's hands, and Chocolatito is just too good to fight that type of fight against, especially, you know, Rungvisai could fight that way because he could absolutely bang, you know, and he is, you know, percentage wise, one of the hardest hitters in boxing. You know, he's a small guy, but he can whack. And I think, you know, Yafai is not one of those guys. And so I think that that was just a really bad game plan on his and his team's part, or at least an execution. I'm not sure what the plan was for them, but that was a bad execution, whatever it was.
Did you think do you think he could have been stopped earlier? Do you think Yafai's corner were, you know, wrong in sending him back out there? Because it was really just a one-sided beatdown from round one.
I get criticized a lot of times, you know, for saying fights should be stopped. And that was one that, you know, if they were to stop it after the eighth, you know, I wouldn't have had a problem with it, you know, but I was not sitting there watching that fight saying they need to get this out of there. I was thinking, hey, they need to be watching this kid and they need to be keeping an eye on this kid. I didn't know that it was at that point where I thought they should stop it, you know. And so there, you know, like the Wilder fight, clearly, you know, he was done and that should have been stopped. You know, this particular fight, I wasn't sure I was at that point, you know, and I always try to look at it from a boxer safety. You know, I was ringside for 7 fighter deaths. You know, I had one fighter fall out of the ring and fall on me and later die in surgery that night. And, you know, so I'm very sensitive to that, as, you know, I think I'm sure everybody is. And that is one of the things that I always get criticized for. I say fights should be stopped early. That was one, though, I look at, and I'm not so sure that, you know, you had an argument to criticize the corner and say they should have stopped it earlier than they did.
So, Kevin, you know, Chocolatito obviously gets the WBA super flyweight world title. Do you think he's found his second wind in his career?
I'll tell you what, I think he found a gigantic payday, because I think, you know, he's got a big fight with Estrada out there.
Right.
And that is going to be, there's going to be a lot of people interested in that, and there's going to be a lot of money paid for that. And I think, you know, it is a terrific fight. I mean, I think there is a really, really big fight there. And I'll tell you what, I don't know what Pacquiao, Team Pacquiao and Top Rank would want to do with Jerwin Nakajas, but I think if Jerwin was interested, Chocolatito would be very happy to go over there and say, hey, I'll take your belt off you too. And I think that those would be two really good fights for him. But that division, there's a lot of really good, you know, fighters out there. So I think there's some fights that can be made that'll make a lot of sense, that'll be a lot of fun fights.
So Kevin, Dougie Fisher last week told us, you know, obviously as another senior member of the boxing media circle, that his personal fighter of the decade was Chocolatito Gonzalez. You, I guess, from your personal opinion, do you agree with something like that, or do you think that would belong to somebody else?
I mean, if we're talking from, you know, 2010 to 2019, I think it has to be Floyd Mayweather. I mean, look at who he beat. Mayweather was undefeated in the decade. He beats Manny Pacquiao. And some people want to say, oh, Manny Pacquiao was at the end of the line. And ask Keith Thurman if Manny Pacquiao was at the end of the line. Ask Adrian Broner if Manny Pacquiao was at the end of the line. He was not. Obviously, we saw that. He beat Canelo Alvarez. You know, again, people want to, you know, everybody for some reason, as great a fighter as Floyd is, people always want to say, well, he didn't do this or he didn't do that. I mean, he fought him. If he hadn't fought, you know, Canelo in 2013, he would have been accused of ducking him. Chocolatito, I thought, was a fantastic fighter in that decade, and he certainly had to be, you know, in the conversation. But to my mind, there was only three really, really legitimate candidates: Andre Ward, Canelo, and Floyd Mayweather. And I you know, you can maybe put Manny in there, but I just kind of think Manny had lost too many times to be in that argument. And when you break them down, you know, Ward didn't have the number of, you know, dynamic wins that Mayweather did, you know, the Kovalev wins at the end. And, you know, so even though Mayweather did not fight past, you know, I say 15, because I don't really count the Conor McGregor fight. But I think he had so many significant fights in that, you know, period of time, and beat some guys that had been, you know, doing some damage and doing things. To me, he was the guy. I would have respected if it was Canelo. I would have respected if it was Andre Ward. I just felt like Mayweather was the best, and he deserved that honor at that point.
So switching to obviously a couple weeks ago, or a couple, 2 weekends ago, I believe, the Wilder Fury heavyweight event that was in Vegas at the MGM Grand recently this month, or last month now. Obviously, you know, one of the big pieces of news following that fight was Wilder's excuse about the costume he wore to the ring in his entrance, the 40-45 pound costume, that it affected his legs. You know, essentially, what's your take on that whole situation?
Well, I should tell you a story because I was the first one to talk to him after the fight was over. And so I had the breaking news on that. And when he called me and he said, the first thing I said is, hey, Deontay, how are you feeling? You know, what's going on? So he told me he was okay and everything. And then I said, you know, dude, it looked like you didn't have legs, you know, from the second round on. Did you get hit with a big shot that kind of messed up your equilibrium? Remember, there was a punch that sort of hit him by the ear. And right. I thought, hey, that I thought there might have been a busted eardrum, although I had talked to his doctor on Sunday morning and the doctor said there was not. So anyways, when I talked to him and he said, you know, it was the costume. I thought he was joking, except the tone of his voice wasn't joking. So I didn't know whether to laugh and like, haha, you know, you're joking me and wait for him to say something else or follow up on it. And so it was kind of awkward for a split second because I wasn't really sure. But, you know, I think it was unfortunate that Deontay made those public comments the way he did. I think he was just emotional after the loss and didn't really think clearly. I think that's really what it is. And, you know, we're in a tough world and people, you know, people don't let you have, you know, quality time and whatever. And they're mocking him and making fun of him, you know, but, and that is too bad. I thought that it was just an overreaction on his part, just emotions got the best of him. And he said something, you know, this is a guy that hadn't lost in over 10 years and, you know, lost the biggest fight of his life when I know he thought he was going to win. That he truly believed he was going to win the fight. And so I think it was just a really difficult situation for him. You know, to me, it doesn't diminish him in my eyes at all. You know, I don't think less of him as a fighter, as a man, because of what he said. But I know that is going to, you know, he's going to have to answer a lot of questions about that. You know, he exercised the rematch clause, and we're going to be hearing about this a lot in the build up to the next fight.
You know, kind of a, you know, in a comparison format, when AJ, since he's another obviously major heavyweight in the division, when AJ lost to Ruiz last year, you know, everybody starts to speculate or they start to hear, you know, rumors or something they heard from sources saying AJ was knocked down in sparring. There was something wrong with him in the locker room. He had a panic attack. You know, different things right. came out subsequent to that fight. But initially, at least for those first few months, AJ kind of gave Ruiz credit to Ruiz saying, hey, you know, nothing was wrong. He beat me. He just a better man won tonight. So in comparison to his immediate reaction following his loss and, you know, obviously a devastating loss to Ruiz that first fight in June last year to Wilder's loss a couple weekends ago to Fury, how do you compare their reactions?
Well, obviously, you know, Deontay's, you know, reaction was not good. I mean, to say, you know, I mean, I find it hard to believe that it did what he said it did, right? Let's talk that. I looked up at the screen. Fury was in the ring. Fury walked to the ring first. I'm in the MGM Grand Garden. I saw Fury in the ring. I looked up and Deontay was pacing in the dressing room and he did not have the outfit on. So Fury was in the ring. So that is important because how long is it from the time that Fury sets foot in the ring until Deontay puts that thing on and walks out? It is not that long of a time. So are you telling me that short walk with that, even if it was 45 pounds and all that, did that? I just don't believe that it did. You know, I'm not calling him a liar. I think he believes it did. I just think, you know, psychologically, you know, he's searching, you know, how did I lose this fight and how did things go so badly for me? And so I think that is really, you know, kind of what happened there. But, you know, the thing, when you look at these two guys and the way they fought compared to, like, I elevate them over AJ for this reason. Look what, maybe I'm wrong on this, but I really don't believe I am. Look at how AJ fought Ruiz in that. Who would you want to see fight? If you said, hey, I'm going to pay money to see Tyson Fury fight again, or I'm going to pay money to see AJ, and all you knew of them is their last fights. You know, AJ goes out there against Andy and he was tentative, you know, and, you know, you can say, oh, he fought, you know, he fought to win the fight and all that. And he did. But, you know, he did not fight like a guy who had confidence. He did not fight like a guy who knew he was the better man and just happened to have a bad night. And, you know, it was just a bad performance. You know, he fought a guy that was there to be taken. You know, Andy Ruiz was way out of shape, wasn't, by his own admission, wasn't ready to fight. And you're sitting there being so tentative and being so cautious with him. I mean, to me, it just didn't make any sense. You know, whereas, you know, and you can say this about Wilder. I mean, hey, look, he got knocked out. but he fought, you know, he got in there and, you know, I don't want to glamorize somebody just because they, you know, they take punches, but I thought like, you know, he went out there and Fury, certainly, you know, he went out there to fight, to win the fight. And he went out there to fight, I'm trying to think, you know, to give the fans their money's worth, you know, what they came to see. And I just kind of thought AJ, I didn't like the way AJ fought. I'm not a guy, I like boxers, you know, and, you know, my favorite fighter of all time was Muhammad Ali. Mm-hmm. You know, and I've written a ton about Mayweather in his career, and people think that, you know, I'm sort of in love with Floyd Mayweather, you know, so I like boxers.
Right.
But I think that there's a difference between, you know, boxing smart, like Andre Ward boxed, and then boxing scared, like what I thought AJ fought against Andy Ruiz. And I think, you know, so while, you know, AJ handled himself better in his public comments in the aftermath, I think the way they fought in their rematches, you know, the edge would go to Fury / Wilder.
Do you think in this third rematch between Fury and Wilder, do you think it's the same story all over again? Do you think Fury just, obviously we know that Wilder still has that unbelievable power in that right hand and it can always come out of nowhere, but do you think Fury, now that he's fought him twice and essentially won a majority or if not all of the rounds against him, do you think Fury just has his number and a third rematch would end the same?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, the other thing that you have to consider is how much punishment he took and the fact that he's going to be back at it fairly soon. You know, I mean, they're going to fight. Bob Arum had suggested maybe they would fight in October, you know, so they get it back during NFL season. To me, that would have benefited. The longer they wait for the rematch, it would benefit Wilder. You know, I think his body needs to rest. I mean, he took a beating in that fight. I mean, a 6'9", 273-pound guy was hitting him right hands and left hooks, you know, all night long, flush shots to the head. And I just look at it and I say, I think, you know, he'd be better off, you know, taking some time off. Is he ever going to be the same? I think that is a legitimate question to ask. I mean, I don't know. You know, there's some fighters, you know, when you fight a Bernard Hopkins or people like that, guys are not usually the same after they fight him. And I think that this might be a situation where we will never see that old Deontay Wilder again in this fight. And I think everything points to Fury in the rematch, in the rubber match, if you want to call it a rubber match, based on that, because boy, I'll tell you what, I mean, while you can always see Wilder landing the home run punch and, you know, and getting a win that way, but I wonder if he just has the same snap, the same speed based on the beating that he took. And that's why I would praise Mark Breland to the sky for what he did, because he saved his fighter. He at least gave him a chance.
Turning it back, Kevin, to the card we were talking about, an Eddie Reynoso fighter, Julio Cesar Martinez, 16-1 with a unanimous decision over Jay Harris, the underdog from England for the WBC flyweight title. What did you think of Julio Cesar Martinez?
Yeah, I like him. I think, you know, I think he is a pretty good little fighter, and I think he's a guy that, you know, is going to be in some big fights out there. You know, he's a guy that you know, when he's in, I'm trying to think what the word I'm trying to use is, you know, he's in the zone, you know, as he showed in the fight against Charlie Edwards, you know, when he's in the zone, when he's focused, you know, he has really got a complete game. And I like him a lot. And I think that he's a guy that, you know, people will enjoy watching him fight. I think he's one of those guys that, you know, for some reason that, you know, the flyweights, the super flyweights, the bantamweights, you know, those smaller weights, they don't get respect. And I always think, you know, this is where Michael Carbajal and Lopez came from. Those guys, you know, there were some great fighters, you know, Ricardo Lopez, there were some great fighters in those weight classes. And I think we have a lot of them now. I don't know how big Julio is going to be in the U.S. because of mainly the weight class he fights in. But I think, you know, there's a lot of good fights out there for him. And I think he's in a situation where, you know, he's going to be getting some good bouts and, you know, being in some entertaining ones. I like him a lot.
It'll be interesting with the announcement today of DAZN going global over to the UK. And they're also expanded into Mexico. So people like Julio Cesar Martinez and Mikey Garcia will obviously expand the brand. What do you think of the expansion of DAZN?
You know, I think it's interesting. I mean, from a business standpoint, I mean, they had to do something because I think they're in a tough spot in the U.S. You know, they put all their eggs in the boxing basket, and, you know, and what they did is they wrote a really bad contract with Canelo. So they don't have the ability to force Canelo to fight who they want him to fight. You know, of course, they were desperate to get him to fight Gennady Golovkin, and they've, for not having a guarantee that they're going to get a fight with Gennady Golovkin, both Canelo and Golovkin are overpaid, right? I mean, Golovkin in particular is really overpaid. There's, you know, look at the fights he's taken since he signed his deal with DAZN, and he was paid that kind of money in anticipation of having a Canelo fight or even two in there. So I think they had to do something. You know, they're in difficult shape in the U.S. because, you know, it's going to be hard for them to get the sports rights. And I think that there's so much content out there at a cheaper price. I love DAZN, and I think, you know, the price, you know, I have the yearly subscription, and I've had it since day one. I think it's awesome, you know, but I think that, you know, people, when you're asking people to buy all these premium products, you know, time and time and time again, it gets to be difficult. You know, so I just find it, you know, because most people are going to have Netflix, and you start adding up all the stuff that you're going to have, and your bill is higher than it was when it was just cable, right?
Right.
And
right.
So, you know, people are looking to get away from that. How much impact, you know, like you think of the UK. Yeah, it's great they're getting into the UK, but Sky Sports is pretty dominant. BT Sport is pretty dominant over there. How much impact is DAZN going to have in the UK, competing against those other entities that have contracts with fighters and contract with promoters? You know, so I think there is, I mean, it had a take, but I don't know that overnight it's just going to, you know, turn things around for them and have them, you know, kicking butt on everybody else.
Kevin, you mentioned like contracts with promoters and what have you. Now that DAZN has obviously announced expansion into the UK, obviously one of their partners is Matchroom Boxing, Eddie Hearn, Barry Hearn, who've had a deal for a long time with Sky Sports. Right. What do you think about now that DAZN has announced expansion into them? You know, what's that partnership between Matchroom and Sky Sports? How is that going to be affected?
Yeah, I mean, you know, DAZN has a piece of Matchroom. So, you know, they bought a piece of Matchroom when they decided to partner with Eddie Hearn. So, you know, it's going to be a tough one. Now, I'm not sure what the contracts call for. And I think at the end of the day, the lawyers are going to be the ones who make the most money out of this thing, because they're going to have to figure out, you know, who gets what. I just think that there's going to be, it's not going to be a simple thing where DAZN's going to go in the UK, flip a switch, and all of a sudden, you know, they're going to have all these fights showing up. Like basically what happened in the US, you know, Hearn went out there and, you know, HBO was dying, you know, Showtime didn't have the budget. I mean, the conditions were ripe when they came to the U.S., especially with Hearn having the checkbook that he had at the time, to really go out there and make a huge impact in the U.S. boxing scene. I don't know that that is, you know, things are going very strong and very well. I mean, they BT Sport paid a record amount for the Fury Wilder rights. They upset Sky, and it was a shock that they got it. I know people at Top Rank were shocked, you know, that BT did what they did. So, you know, boxing is a big brand over there, and they're, you know, Sky and BT are covered. So, you know, I just think it's going to be a long road, but I think it was a necessary step for DAZN, just because, hey, you got to get out there and you got to get more people seeing your product. And so I think that that's what they did. You know, they're trying to get more subscribers. They're trying to get more people out there seeing their product. And I think really what you're going to see is you're going to see an expansion of their sports that they offer. I think they're going to start trying to bid for more content, not just boxing. And I think that's going to be really, this is setting them up for something like that down the road.
Kevin, I forgot to touch on it when we were talking about Wilder Fury, but the pay-per-view numbers, you know, have been estimated 800, 850,000,
yeah,
you know, around that general area. What's your reaction to those numbers, especially with the, you know, the Super Bowl commercial that they had, and, you know, both ESPN and Fox coming together? What's your take on that?
You know, to me, disappointing numbers. You know, I thought when the fight was made, I thought 1,250,000 was the number the first day, and I stuck to that number to the last day. I know Bob Arum was saying 2 million, and, you know, and I reported it, as a lot of people did, that he was saying that. I looked at it and I thought, you know, $1 million, $1.25 million was the number that really was going to go out there. And I thought ESPN and Fox did a phenomenal job in pushing the fight. And normally, you know, it's the promoters who were doing it, and they were almost acting like the promoters, you know. The, I mean, they did such a good job of creating awareness for the fight and getting out there that, you know, it's hard to imagine. And certainly they're not going to get the same luck the next time. The media interest, you know, because of what happened, the media interest isn't going to be as strong, and the third fight it's going to happen in the summer, so not as good a time of the year. You know, they're not going to have the NFL, they're not going to have NBA playing, you know, because they got stuff during the NBA All-Star game, they got stuff during the college football national championship game. All these things that they had then, you know, they're not going to have when they fight in the summer. It's going to be a lot different situation. So I was frankly disappointed. I thought the fighters themselves, they really gave themselves. They got out there. You know, an 800,000 pay-per-view is a really good pay-per-view, except when you're looking to make, you know, 1.2 million, which was their break-even point.
Right.
That was the problem, I think, there, that they certainly just they didn't hit a number that they thought they would hit.
Kevin, we're only 2 months away from Canelo's next fight. 1 week it's Callum Smith, and then it's Billy Joe Saunders, then it's Callum Smith, and now it looks like it's back to Billy Joe Saunders. Yeah. Do you know when we're going to get an announcement?
I think this week sometime, at the very latest. I would not be surprised if it's at the end of this week, but I think it's the very latest, the beginning of next week. But I think it's this week is the week they're going to make the announcement. And I'm pretty sure it's going to be Billy Joe. I think that's kind of who they zeroed in on, and so they're moving in that direction. You know, I'm not sure that I like, you know, either one over the other. I mean, again, I'm just in the camp. Hey, let's get the Golovkin fight. I just think that is the fight. People love those two fights. They were two really good fights. But you know, Canelo is really angry at Gennady for what he said about the clenbuterol and the doping. And I don't think he wants to give another fight since he's not contractually obligated to do it. I think he's gonna withhold it from him.
You know, we're wrapping up here with you, Kevin. You know, since you have been, as we mentioned, you've been in the sport, covering the sport as part of the press for numerous years now. So you've obviously seen and heard numerous things all over the sport, from the negative side, the negative aspect, to the positive things, you know, and all in between, to the up and coming, you know, youth who are thinking about getting into journalism, especially into the sport of boxing. What's your advice to that generation?
Well, go in with your eyes open. I mean, you know, I love journalism, and it's given me a great career, and I've been on every continent on earth, and I've covered, you know, I haven't covered the Kentucky Derby, and I've been to a Super Bowl, but I haven't covered the Super Bowl. But other than that, I think every major sporting event I have covered at one point or another, and hundreds, if not thousands, of world title fight. So I journalism has been great to me and allow me to do what I love to do. It's a difficult business to get into now if you're just starting, but I wouldn't tell anybody not to do it, because there's a desperate need for good people. You know, what ended up happening when newspapers started going down, I don't think anybody really kind of saw the exchange from what the old standard had been, you know, the nightly news on TV and the newspaper in the morning. And now all of a sudden the way people consume their news is so much different than it used to be before. And so there was a gap in journalism, but I think now, you know, we're at a point where we understand what the product is. We understand what is needed. And so I think if you're good, and, you know, Ariel Helwani on the MMA side is somebody that I think is a great example. He carved a niche for himself. He got in there. I remember I've told this story many times, but he called me one day, couldn't get credentialed to a UFC show, and was really frustrated. And I called Dana White and I said, this guy is really good. You should credential him. He got credentialed. Now Ariel's like the top guy in the MMA media. Because he found a niche that he could do well. And I think that my advice to anybody going into journalism at this point, you know, is, I mean, you have to get a broad-based education, and you can't just focus, I want to be the next, you know, Ariel Helwani, or I want to be the next Doug Fisher. You know, you have to go out there and say, I'm going to be the best journalist I can be. But you have to create some niche for yourself once you get into that position. And you have to offer something that is not out there and that is needed. And I think if you can do that, there's opportunities for people out there. There's going to be a lot of people that write in some cases, good stuff that don't really get paid for it. But I think there are going to be a lot of other people who can make a living, and you're going to see them, you know, in the media going forward. And I would encourage anybody who really has an interest in journalism to pursue it, because there are going to be jobs there. It's just, you know, the traditional way we used to think of journalism has changed.
Well, on that note, Kevin, you know, I don't think there's any better way to end it than a bit of advice for the younger crowd in the media. You know, we appreciate you jumping on the Last Round podcast this week. You know, go ahead and plug obviously Yahoo Sports, where your work can be found, Twitter, Instagram, anything you need to plug, go ahead. The floor is yours.
I appreciate that. Yeah, my Twitter is at Kevin I, K-E-V-I-N-I. My Instagram is my name all together, Kevin Ioli, K-E-V-I-N-I-O-L-E. Of course, I'm on Yahoo Sports, and I also I haven't been updating it a lot, but KevinIoli.com. Every now and then, I usually write about the Golden Knights on there. That's my my other passion is the right. Golden Knights and the Pittsburgh Penguins. So I love hockey. So those are my things. But yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk to your listeners.
Sounds good. We hope to have you on again in the future, Kevin. And you take care. Have a good rest of your night.
You too. Thanks.
Thank you. So. I like this new trend that we're going on, and I'll give you all the credit, Mike. I like the new trend that we're getting these senior level press members, because I've had some people, you know, some friends of mine, family and stuff, like, hey, you know, I like you guys having these senior level senior members of the media, you know, because obviously, like, a lot of them are the most well known, especially by older fans, you know, Dan Rafio, Kevin Ioli, Doug Fisher. Whether you agree with them or not, or you like them or not, like, you know, they've been around the game, so like a lot of the older fans know who they are. And people have told me, like, you know, I appreciate when they come on because they have a lot of knowledge. What do you think? And so I give you all that credit, Mike. For once, you get the credit.
This week. No, I agree. Obviously, you know, people listen to us every week, and I'm sure they kind of get, you know, maybe bored of listening to our views. So it's always good to get, you know, a third person's opinion, somebody that was maybe ringside, someone that's been there and done that. Especially someone like Dougie Fisher and Kevin Ioli, who have that, you know, that boxing historian view, because they've been in and around the sport for a long time. So it's good just to get another eyes on the subject.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. So we should definitely keep that trend going. You know, let's preview this weekend's fight, the 7th of March from the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, NY, on Fox. Another heavyweight championship, not championship fight, but another heavyweight fight. And the undefeated 20-0 Adam Kownacki, who's been on the show before. He was on our show immediately after his last fight.
That's true.
Like 2 days after. So we appreciate that for him. So I'm sure we'll try to get him on in the future again. He goes up against Robert Hellenius. I believe I said that right. Kownacki's last fight, if you guys remember, was against the Nightmare, Chris Areola, who's a local Southern California fighter over here. He's, you know, he's been around for years. He fought Klitschko, which was probably his most high-profile fight he was in at the time.
That surprisingly broke CompuBox records.
It was, yeah. We had Dan Canobio on from CompuBox, and he said that fight was ridiculous. It broke, you know, the amount – the punches thrown, right, for a heavyweight matchup.
Two people that aesthetically you wouldn't think would throw that many punches. Hey, that just trying to be mean, but
– that just shows you their stamina, though. You know,
that's true.
That's impressive.
Because they had to stand in the trenches because they couldn't move, so they just had to just throw.
Hey, I thought that was awesome, though. You know, they built a memory. They're in the record books, you know.
Because you would think if you had to guess, you'd say, you know, Leo Santa Cruz and somebody, one of his opponents.
Right.
Because just Leo Santa Cruz throws a million punches. You wouldn't think of somebody like Kownacki and Chris Areola.
I thought that was crazy. But obviously, you know, PBC is trying to build up Kownacki to eventually, because he's a PBC fighter, he's a Heyman and Vice fighter. I think they're trying to build him up to, you know, have him as a Wilder opponent, as Luis Ortiz, or maybe Andy Ruiz. What do you think?
Today, Mike Coppinger quoted his sources, said that the winner of this, which obviously they're trying to make Adam Kownacki, because he's the A-side, against Andy Ruiz.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
That's what he released today.
So you think, because I think Ruiz said today or recently that, like, big news, big announcement coming soon. Do you think this is what he's foreshadowing, that okay, he expects Kownacki to win and then they announce that fight?
I hope so. Honestly, on paper, I think it's a great fight. Both of them, I think, you know, kind of similar stature, you know, not the tallest of heavyweights. Karnacki throws a lot of punches. Andy Ruiz.
You don't think Luis Ortiz would be more competitive and more, for, you know, from the fan perspective, more hyped?
I think the Karnacki.
I like the I like Ortiz Ruiz. I do.
I think the Karnacki Ruiz fight is just more of a war. And just being a fan from the side, I would prefer to see that. I think Luis Ortiz is good. Doesn't throw many punches. More skillful. I don't know whether it's just an age thing that he doesn't waste many punches, where Karnacki and Ruiz, I think, will just stand in the trenches and throw till one of them can't get up.
I guess. The good thing is that at least Ruiz is back. I'm telling you, like, I know people are upset because Ruiz, you know, lost against AJ and, you know, he came in overweight and then he left his trainer, Manny Robles, and all this other stuff and, you know, whatever. But I hope that was just like a one time. I hope Ruiz comes back in this next fight and he just looks in prime form, because not only for boxing is he good, but for the heavyweight division, he's even better. And I mean, you know, this Mexican fighters are notoriously popular. And I mean, we've never really had that one. I mean, Ruiz was the first, at least what, Mexican fighter at the heavyweight division. He obviously was the first Mexican heavyweight champion of the world. You know, I know people might be yelling at their speakers right now or their earbuds saying, oh, he's not Mexican. He's Mexican-American or of Mexican descent. Like, no, like, he's Mexican. Like, leave the guy alone. You know, this whole debate, like, leave, you know, whatever. But I hope, you know, for the good of his sport and obviously for the good of his career, I hope he comes back, because then it gives more fire to the heavyweight division. And, I mean, you know this. Mexican fans, they love boxing. They buy boxing. So it helps. It gives life, more lifeblood to the sport, right?
I agree. I think he's good for the sport. You know, that performance against AJ was amazing in the first fight. You know, the only thing I worry about is how much does he want it now? You know, when he wasn't earning great paydays, when he was earning, you know, 30, 40, 50 grand, even then, you know, he was coming in out of shape. And now that he's got a lot of money, he doesn't need it as much.
Right.
Is he going to come in, you know, 300 pounds? You know, he needs a coach where he's kind of, you know, scared of, that he's going to put the work in. Like Joe Diaz was saying about, you know, Jojo Diaz, he was kind of touching on, you know, he wasn't listening to his coach, which was his father and stuff like that. He was kind of just running the camp. You know, Andy Ruiz needs somebody like a Joe Diaz, a Teddy Atlas, that's going to whip him into shape and, you know, make him do things, you know, make him uncomfortable so he loses the weight. You know, now he's a multimillionaire. Is he going to come in just the same as he did in the AJ rematch, you know, grossly overweight?
Who knows?
That's the thing I worry about, because he doesn't need it as much.
Who knows? But, you know, if he ends up fighting Karnacki, if that's what they're waiting for this weekend, to Karnacki to get a victory on Saturday in Brooklyn, and then they maybe announce that Ruiz is next. You know, I'm not mad at that fight. I think it's a good fight. Kalnacki's obviously shown, especially in the Areola fight, that he can give it just as much as he can take it. So I wouldn't be mad at that fight. You know, I'd be glad to at least see Ruiz back and all that stuff. So we'll see. We'll see how that turns out. But, you know, there's a lot of names. You know, obviously AJ Wilder, Fury are the major heavyweights.
Dylan White?
I guess, you know. He's going up on, what, 700, more than 700 days without a WBC title shot?
Yeah, by the time it comes around, it'll be, like 3 years? February 21st, 2021?
I guess, man. I guess. But you're so upset, Mike. Just because he's a countryman? Is that why you're so upset?
Got to spot your own, Danny.
So we'll see. But Kanakio this weekend on Fox from the Barclays Center, as I mentioned. And also news and notes wrapping up here. Joshua versus Pulev, AJ versus Kubrat Pulev is confirmed for June 20th at the, is it Tottenham?
Tottenham Hotspurs Stadium.
Hotspurs
in London.
What is that? What is that?
Tottenham Hotspurs. It's a soccer team, football team.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah, it's their new stadium, yeah.
Okay. I don't know what it was. I thought it was Cowboy Boots or something, like Spurs or something. I don't know. You know San Antonio Spurs, the basketball team?
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I wasn't sure, but that's your expertise. That's why I asked you. So how many seats does that place hold?
I think it holds 80.
What? They'll sell all 80?
But then even then, with the floor seats they could put in over the grass, you're looking at maybe a little more than that.
Will AJ sell them all out? Or
yeah.
Yeah,
boxing in England, you know, if that Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder fight was in England, it would have sold out in 5 minutes.
Ridiculous, huh? Ridiculous. Oof, that's ridiculous. So obviously AJ's back after his reclaiming his world heavyweight title belts against Ruiz back in December. He comes against Pulev.
Three-round job.
You think so?
Yeah.
Under three rounds?
I mean, made for him.
I mean, obviously we'll talk about it as it gets closer to that fight date, but that's your early prediction right now?
Yeah, three rounds.
I guess. Pulev's a top-ranked fighter, too. So top ranks involved, too. They got their hand in Wilder with PBC, and now they got their hand over here with AJ. They're all over the place. They're on both sides. They're making money on both sides.
Jarrell Miller,
too. I think he's officially signed, too, right?
Yes, he's officially signed to Top Rank.
That's crazy, man. Hey, you got to give it to Top Rank, regardless of what you think of them. They got their hands in a lot of pots right now, and it's working out for them.
I mean, I think the way that this boxing's going, you know, they've got so many cards throughout the year that if you're a boxer now, it's prime. It's a big checks coming in from DAZN. Everybody's getting signed up because they have all these dates to fill.
No, it's true. It's true. And, like, you know, like we talked to Kevin Ioli about earlier, you know, now DAZN's expanding to the UK, and then you mentioned like 20 other countries or what have you. And then the whole Sky Sports deal with Matchroom, is that going to be affected? And then he mentioned how Canelo and Gennady Golovkin are being overpaid because of their opponents they've been fighting, especially Triple G, which I agree with the Triple G one. That's for sure. Like, you know, but I mean, is that his fault or is that DAZN's fault for not structuring their contract a certain way, like from a legal standpoint? I mean, I don't know. But like,
I think when you're a new business, though, sometimes, you know, they had to pay those kind of like a loss leader. They knew they were going to go into those contracts losing money, but it was going to draw eyes and subscribers to right. the channel. So I think maybe that was something that they kind of knew, you know, we're going to lose on this, but 3, 4, 5 years down the line, you know, we're going to gain.
Yeah, it's the long con, the long-term game, right, Mike?
Yeah, exactly. You know, especially when you know, by the time they get into what, I think May 2nd, Joe Markowski put out, they're going to be in 20.
He's a VP of DAZN or something?
Yes, that's right, yeah. So he's going to be running this. So he's going to be pushing out into 20 more countries, and they're already in, like, Germany, Italy. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do. You know, they're going to be very global, so.
Global. But, you know, wrapping up here, guys, we appreciate our big thanks to Kevin Ioli of Yahoo Sports for jumping on this week and helping us review some fights and then talking news and notes of this sport that changes on a daily basis, weekly basis, hourly basis, minute by minute. You know, big thanks to Kevin Ioli. Check out his stuff at Yahoo Sports, yahoo.com, yahoosports.com, all that stuff. Obviously he plugged his own site, kevinioli.com. You know, he knows a lot about the sport. You know, he's been around, he's seen a lot, and he's still going. So if you see him, give him a shout out. But, once again, we appreciate you guys listening to episode 71 of the Last Round Podcast this week, whether you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, all that good stuff, in the kitchen, on the toilet, in the car, maybe you're in an airplane. Maybe you're in a helicopter. I don't know. What else, Mike? Where else could they be?
I have no idea. At work. Running.
Running. We appreciate it. Thank you for supporting us each and every week. Whether this is your 71st episode or this is your first episode, welcome. We appreciate it. So for my partner, Michael, the Franchise Shepherd, I'm Danny Z. This is the Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round